It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In 1957, you could generate a month's worth of electricity for the average American home using solar panels for around $300,000. Today, you can generate that same amount of electricity using solar panels for about $25. That comparison is in a new book that charts the rise of solar energy and how it's become the cheapest, most efficient power source in the history of the world, even in places that aren't particularly sunny. PV panels convert sunlight into electricity. So how did they get so cheap, and what will it mean for the future of our power grid? Greg Nemeth is a professor in the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. He is the author of How Solar Energy Became Cheap, Pathway to a Solar-Centric Economy. Greg, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be here.
So the first edition of your book comes out in 2019, exploring how solar energy became so affordable. Why did you see a need to update the book?
I wasn't sure there was a need, but as I looked closer, the progress that's happened in solar in the last 6 years has really been dramatic, and it's really changed the way the solar future looks. So we've had adoption of solar is about four times what it was 6 years ago. The costs have dropped by 75%. And we've seen an array of other changes as well. And so it really shifted the focus of the book to not only update the data and get everything up to date, but also to think about the implications, which is now what happens when solar takes over the global energy system, which it looks like it's headed to do.
So 75% price drop. You quote the International Energy Agency referring to solar as now the cheapest way humans have ever made electricity and as the cheapest form of electricity in almost all countries. How cheap is cheap?
Well, the cost of electricity has been falling over the last 100 years, and it's been rare to have a new technology to come on and undercut what fossil fuels have been giving us over the last 100 years. And so now we have it. And so now we have electricity that was, if you had the first solar cells that we put on satellites in 1958, it would have cost you $300,000 a month to power your home with it. Whereas now, if you just think about the solar and cost it, it's something like $30 or $40 a month for the electricity. So it's come down a lot, but it's also cheaper than the alternative. So that's what's really driving solar and makes it exciting to think about what could happen next.
And yet, it still costs roughly $30,000 to install solar panels on a home here in this country. And that may not be affordable to most families. What do you make of that?
Well, the here in this country is a key part of what you just said, because in the U.S., solar costs about three times what it would cost in other developed countries with similar wages like Australia and Germany, where that $30,000 system would cost $10,000. It's still a substantial expense, but that's on the level of a furnace rather than on the level of a car. And so if we could make some of the changes to the U.S. so that we could pay what the rest of the world is paying for solar, I think we'd see a lot more adoption than we already see.
You say set our eyes on Australia, which followed a model in its use of solar. Rather than building large solar farms owned by utilities, it rapidly installed rooftop solar on homes. About 40% of homes there have solar panels. How did they do that?
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And that's a new story that wasn't in the book in 2019 because it hadn't happened yet. And Australia is interesting because it's a big exporter of fossil fuels, of coal to China, of natural gas to the rest of Asia. And despite that, they really made a big push on going with solar for electricity provision. And it's been things like making the installations really simple and streamlined. You can get a solar panel or a solar system installed in your house, and it comes with a guarantee that they'll do it in one day. And that dramatically reduces the cost. And it's also subtle things like how permitting works and delays with getting the solar installed. All of that is much more turnkey in Australia. But it came from some policy decisions at the national level to say, we're really going to do this. This is the direction we want to go. And there was strong social consensus that we want to take advantage of the low cost, the reliability, not having to rely on fossil fuels, and then the air pollution and climate benefits that come with more and more solar. It's a sunny place, but we have sunny places like that in the U.S. as well. And so it really provides a model for what places like the U.S. and others could do. And it's really pushing on residential solar rather than these large utility scale projects, which is more of what we've done in Wisconsin.
Hmm.
I've learned, too, through your book about this history of how so many countries pitched in on the innovation and advancements of solar. And, you know, Germany did this and Japan did this and U.S. and China and Australia. Is that what is unique here about solar's playbook, that its origin story is not just one place in the world?
Yeah, I think it's pretty distinct because people always want to say who did it, and no one country did it. It was really this kind of relay race where, to simplify the story that you were outlining, I say that the U.S. created the technology, Germany built a market, and China made it cheap. And there were some other countries that played a role as well. But each of the countries that was involved, like six key countries, they contributed something distinct, some know-how or some way of developing policy or developing innovations, and each country was able to build on the other. So it really was the product of this global innovation system. And I think that's kind of the magic of what made it really work so well, is that it were contributions from lots of different places. And now we have availability to do solar in lots of different countries and states. And that is what we're doing today.
I want to pick up on that. How widespread is solar becoming around the world? And then where are the gaps?
So now we've got about 7% of global electricity is coming from solar. And then if you put all energy together, like think of energy that goes into fertilizers and into cars, solar is about 3% of that. And depending on your perspective, that seems like a lot to me, having seen solar be not even a percent for a long time. And it's also a number that's doubling about every 3 years. So you start taking that 7% and doubling that every 3 or 4 years, you get to pretty big numbers very quickly. In fact, by the time you get to the mid-2030s, you're at about half of electricity supply. And so that's the big change that's happening. Solar's not on the margins anymore, just happening in a few innovative countries. It's happening around the world. It's becoming a big part of global electricity supply. And it's being deployed in places that we wouldn't think of being on the technology frontier, like Pakistan has been a big adopter of solar in the last couple of years because the electric grid is so unreliable, and because they can get cheap panels next door from China. So we're seeing that happen in lots of different places. And it's interesting because those are different types of places. They have different amounts of sunshine, different electricity systems, different levels of income. And each of them are doing it a little bit differently. But some of them are getting up to really high levels, like Australia, we already talked about. Chile has gone up above 20% of its electricity, and others are marching forward as well. So it is a really a global phenomenon that's happening, and it's in a much bigger way than I saw 6 years ago when I did the first edition of the book.
Taking this to Wisconsin then, in 2022, solar accounting for about 3% of Wisconsin's power generation, according to the State Public Service Commission's assessment. It accounted for less than a tenth of a percent in 2015. Is that the typical kind of growth that you're seeing out there?
Yeah, that's exponential growth to go from that tiny number in 2015 to what you said in 2022. And now we're at something like 5% of electricity. That's rapid growth. And I think that's also something that I was noticing when I did the first book in 2018, 2019, and there was kind of big projects being proposed in Wisconsin. I remember thinking, really? We're doing big solar in Wisconsin? I've been seeing it happen in the Middle East and the southwest of the U.S., but that was a sign of things to come. And so that's been happening more and more in our state. So now we're up about 5% of electricity. It's a little bit behind the rest of the U.S., which is about 7%, but it's not too far behind. I think the distinct part about solar in Wisconsin, though, is it's really been utility-scale solar that's driven it and not as much residential scale, which in a lot of other places, Australia is a good example, we're seeing a lot more rooftop solar. And so that's probably where the bigger opportunity is for our state.
Why do you think the utility-scale solar is excelling in Wisconsin versus rooftop?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not completely sure. I would say one reason is that for a while it was really difficult to do what's called third-party financing. So when you buy a phone, you often pay for it over 2 years. You buy a car, you pay for it over 5 years. So there was ways of doing that with solar where you would actually lease the system from a third party, which would lease it for you. And that was kind of tied up in the courts for quite a while. And I think that's put a chill on the residential sector. So getting some of the rules straightened out, getting the permitting very streamlined, and that'll help the installer community get mature and efficient at installing solar. And that's, I think that's a roadway for us to get to more solar on rooftops, because we're really, we're a little bit less than 1% of all homes in Wisconsin have solar. And that's behind where the rest of the U.S. is.
We're talking about how solar power became so cheap and efficient. Greg Nemeth is the author of How Solar Energy Became Cheap, Pathway to a Solar-Centric Economy. Greg, as you talk about U.S. inventing solar technology, Germany creating markets for it, and China making it cheap, right now you quote that the world's PV modules have, you know, basically China has become more and more of the producer of these modules. Is that where the market for manufacturing remains? And then thinking about that in the context of a trade war, what's going on?
Yeah, that's a hot issue right now. It has been for a while. I mean, the first tariffs on solar were put in place by the Obama administration in 2010. So it's been a trade war for a while. And it's also become more concentrated in China. And that's actually a surprise to me. But from where I was in 2019 to this new book in 2025, I had this idea that eventually the know-how would get dispersed and places in India or Saudi Arabia or Vietnam, and especially in the U.S., would start to produce their own solar because they can do whatever China had done to put together the machines and optimize the supply chain and produce them. But China's just found a way to keep making solar cheaper and cheaper. And so it's been way more of a moving target than I would have expected. And so for the whole world, in a lot of ways, it's incredible, because that, you know, $30,000 system is now $10,000 and will go to $5,000. So that's been beneficial for the rest of the world. There are concerns, though, about having such a core technology being mostly produced in one place. And so a lot of the effort in the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years for the U.S. to develop its own supply chain and produce its own solar has been bearing some fruit and has been growing. And it's not at the scale of China. It's still small. But the fact that we have a potential to grow a industry in the U.S., I think, could be very helpful for countering that. But I also think that production eventually will start to move away from China to other places. And we're already having a lot of solar produced in places like Vietnam and Malaysia, and to some extent in the U.S.
Silicon, the primary input material for these solar modules, can the U.S. get that type of material, efficiently, quickly, and at the right price?
Yeah, material is no problem with solar. We can make it. You know, we're basically using sand to make silicon chips, and quartz, and we're using sand to make glass. And glass is the biggest component of solar. Silicon's kind of the core technology to convert the sunlight to electricity. So, and then there's copper and aluminum and other things. There's nothing exotic in solar. There's nothing toxic, and there's nothing rare. And that's different from wind turbines. It's different from electric vehicles and batteries. So solar really does not have these constraints about materials that others do. And so that's not something we have to worry about in the U.S. It's more just assembling the manufacturing capability to make the raw material, the purified silicon, and then to process it into solar cells and into modules.
We're seeing the Trump administration roll back subsidies for solar energy, for energy programs. And it's interesting because you wrote about how President Reagan made cuts to our country's solar program in 1981. And it made me wonder, do you see parallels now under the Trump administration with cuts to clean energy programs?
Great to have that question, because I just think it's so, to me, important to use our history and experience to inform what we've got today. And so I think there are parallels and there are limitations of that comparison. So first of all, the parallel is what happened after 1981. So we invested hugely in solar in the 1970s. And then after the Reagan election in 1981, we cut the solar R&D budget by 85% within a couple of years. And so that's kind of what's been happening now in terms of cutting the subsidies for solar and the research spending as well. What happened in the 80s is that the frontier of innovation went elsewhere. It went to Japan and eventually Germany and eventually China, because that's where the innovation was, that's where the support was, and eventually that's where the markets were. And so on one hand, that would be my biggest concern right now is for solar, but a lot of other clean energy technologies that are just growing. There's huge demand for them around the world, that gets met by other countries rather than the U.S. And so that's a concern and definitely historical parallels. The difference is that there's a lot more momentum with the industry now than there was in 1981. So it's big. It's mature. It's several percent of global electricity supply. There's big companies involved. And so there isn't a sense that we can just cut off clean energy the way we really did in 1981. So there's momentum behind it. The recent policies are going to slow down the growth in the U.S., but they won't slow down the growth in the rest of the world, and they won't stop growth in the U.S. But it's also a point where we need to be speeding up our deployment of solar and clean energy technologies. And that's where I really do have concerns, because these policies are taking away support and will slow things down.
Another takeaway, you say that we need more than just solar. We need other technologies in the mix, in the energy mix. I mean, what lessons can we take away from the solar industry that could be applied to other green energies or technologies that could play well with solar?
Solar works a lot better when you've got friendly other technologies. We've got wind power that's great because when it's sunny and it's windy are usually at different times, so that can work well together. You can build transmission that links those together. Batteries help a lot because you can store energy and use it later in the day, so that helps a lot. And then just using information technology and sensors and smart devices can move energy around, or you use energy at different times so that when it's available, you use more of it. So that all helps. And those other technologies also need support. And what we found with solar is that there's some combination of you want to focus on the improving the technology, so sometimes called technology push. That can be R&D, it can be education, research and science, new materials, getting people smart on what the frontier of innovation is. So that's part of it. The other side of it is markets, and that's where we want to actually have demand for things like solar, like electric vehicles, like wind turbines, like smart devices, and other technologies we might need. And that's the part that's moved away in the last 6 months, and that's what the U.S. is really leading on, was having these kind of small initial markets for solar, for wind, for electric vehicles, and then other things like advanced nuclear reactors and other technologies that could be very useful. And that part I'm concerned about, because that part we're missing in a lot of our clean energy innovation right now, the market side where we actually have customers for these technologies.
I wonder if that is where the pessimism has been lurking about solar's potential, because you talk about how there were a lot of people who are just thumbs down on solar, but that could also be changing.
Yeah, I mean, solar, it's changing in that it's becoming more mainstream. It's not as exotic. It's becoming more affordable, and it's working well because this whole system is getting better designed to use it. And also, we have other models. We can look to places like Australia, like Germany, like Spain, like Chile, that where they're not having problems with keeping the lights on, even though they're using sometimes 50% solar at certain times. So there's a lot of reasons why we should expect solar will continue and will grow. It's just we're taking some of the support away from that movement at a time when we really need to be accelerating it and pushing it and taking advantage of this resource that we now have that we didn't have 10 years ago. So I think that's where we're really squandering an opportunity.
Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Great to be here. Good talking to you about it.
Greg Nemeth is a professor in the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, author of How Solar Energy Became Cheap, Pathway to a Solar-Centric Economy. His new book is a history of solar energy and an exploration for how it's become inexpensive.